you've been learning about value investing, finance, just regular investment for a while now, but you don't know where to go next. You're getting confused about the vast amount of information on the internet. You don't want to waste your time on crap information. You want good information and reliable information. In this series of videos on value investing and finance education, you will find those answers to those questions and much more. My name is Jason Rivera. Welcome to Value Investing and Finance Education. Hey, Jason here. In today's case study video, we're going to do an investment analysis of General Electric, stock ticker GE. Before I get to that, though, I need to let you know you can get this series as a podcast anywhere in the world for free on all major podcasting platforms, Stitcher, Anchor, SoundCloud, Spotify, iTunes, and more. You can get this as part of the I Love Value Investing podcast anywhere in the world for free. If you like this video and our other videos, make sure to like, love, share, subscribe, and hit the notification bell on YouTube so you can get all of our videos, or so you're notified as we release new videos and are releasing new videos all the time. Recent case study video series, we've been done investment analysis of Archer Daniels Midland for Andrew W. CVS, we covered CVS Health. Ford, U.S. Steel for Cody S., T-Mobile, IBM and its upcoming spinoff, AT&T, Cody, and ExxonMobil. I will reference those videos for specific things that I taught in those videos. For example, if something comes up about book value, intangible assets, impairments, goodwill, all that kind of stuff, I'll probably reference the Cody and the ExxonMobil videos. Those are linked. All the videos that I just mentioned are linked below this. So if I reference a specific video, you can find it in the description below this. Also a disclaimer before we get going, because I didn't have a disclaimer on the first set of videos and some people didn't like that. So this is for informational purposes only. I do not own stock in any company I talk about, and I don't short stocks ever. So any stock I talk about is I'm going through my process that I go through for every investment I look at. And this is my visual preliminary analysis checklist. You can get the full checklist, the full written checklist to follow this process for free at the link below. And I'll tell you what that is at the end of the video. Okay. So nothing major of note here for GE. This is one indication maybe that it might be overvalued. I'm frankly surprised that its dividend is so low. That's interesting for such an old company that its dividend is so low. Nothing other than that major of note here. Hugely negative here. In the last decade, its revenues have fallen by about, 40-45% off the top of my head? From $150.2 billion in 2010 to $83.9 billion in the trailing 12-month period. That is really bad. Horrific, bad, terrible, substitute your own word here, that's not good in really any sense, especially when you combine that with what is down here. Operating margins have cratered from 20.1% in 2010 and actually 39.4% in 2011, which are fantastic. I look for anything above 10% on a consistent basis, to 0.8% in the trailing 12-month period. That's a loss 95-99%. Something like that, in operating profits or an operating profit margin, which leads to operating profits dropping from $30.2 billion in 2010 and $56 billion in 2011 to only $656 million in the trailing 12-month period. That is devastating, is another word to use here. That is, again, I don't know how else to state that. That's really bad. Earnings per share have cratered, and they've had to cut their dividend because their earnings per share and the profits have cratered so much. They've had to cut their dividend from a high of 93 cents a share in 2016 to only 4 cents a share this year, which again, horrific. Especially if you're a dividend investor, that is terrible. Shares, they've bought back about a little bit under 2 billion shares. Typically, that's a good thing. In this case, it might not be. Because of their hugely negative profit or their huge falls in their profit margins, revenues, everything so far. book value per share also cratered. Again, this could be due to impairments, could be due to write-offs, could be due to asset sales. We'll find out more with the balance sheet. But typically, you want to see this number going up over time, because this is a kind of very basic level intrinsic value estimate. So if this is going up over time, it means, or it's one sign that the intrinsic value of the company may be going up over time. If it's going down, in this case, drastically from $11.2 per share in 2010 to $3.80 a share in the 12-month period, this is a good sign that the value of the stock has, or the intrinsic value, the underlying value of the stock has fallen over this time, which we will look at now with the stock chart. Okay, and we're back. I had a brief pause there because my computer was taking forever. So, looks like August 25th, 2000 at $59.31 per share. 10 years ago, its share price, then it cratered from there, rose a little bit in the early mid-2000s to a high of around $40 per share right before the financial crisis in 2007 hit, then cratered from there again. And then it rose back in 2010, its share price was $15 a share. So since then, it's about halved to $8 a share. And again, so huge destruction of value since in the last 20 years, and a still bad destruction of value in the last 10 years. Not, again, really bad here. And this is an indication that I kind of knew that was going to be from that, or from this number, the book value per share. I kind of figured that was going to be from their stock chart, or that's what showed on their stock chart. Sorry. Again, free cash flow cratered from $26.3 billion in 2010 to $2.6 billion in the trailing 12-month period. None of this is good. ROIC is okay at 7.1%. I look for anything about 10% on a consistent basis. They don't have any year in the last decade where they're about 10%. And four years where it's negative. Free cash flow to sales, again, not great. I look for anything about 5% on a consistent basis at the beginning of the decade. They were, actually until 2016, they were up or around 10%. And then in 2016, it just went negative, and then it's barely recovered since then. Again, none of this is good. good cash levels, but frankly, I'm assuming they have a lot of debt. And their cash levels are about equal with their debt levels, which is not great. And I can almost guarantee that their cash levels are so high because they raised debt in the last couple of quarters, because I've seen that at a lot of different companies. So of the long-term liabilities, because they're such an old company, they likely have a lot of legacy expenses as well, things like pensions, which typically aren't great either, at least for the company. Okay, cash conversion cycle. We talked about this a lot in the video I did for Andrew on Archer Daniels Midland. So if you're, and a little bit on the last video we did on CVS. So if you want to learn more about why this is such an important number, go to those videos, because I'm going to kind of only gloss over the points here. But specifically go to the Archer Daniels Midland video, where that was a longer video where I go pretty in depth in talking about the cash conversion cycle. So in 2010, their cash conversion cycle was 15 days. Now it's 75 days, and it hit a high of 724 days in 2012. Typically, you want to see this going down over time, because that means the company is becoming more efficient at turning cash into inventory, and then turning inventory into sales, and then turning that sales back into more cash, and then completing the cycle. The faster you turn this cycle, is what it's called, is the faster you make money, and the faster you can reinvest it, and essentially the more efficient you are. What this shows is from its 15 days in 2010 to 720 days, 24 days in 2012 to still 75 days in the trailing 12-month period, is that they've got less efficient over time. And that is shown in it's taking longer for them to sell stuff. It's taking them 70.5 days now versus 2010. It was 43 days rounded up. They have more inventory, so they're selling stuff slower, which makes sense because their sales are slower. It was 60 days in 2010 and 81 days in the trailing 12-month period, while also having to pay their suppliers faster. 87 days in 2010 versus 77 days rounded up in the trailing 12-month period. Again, this none of this is good. This is not good, and I want to get into it here, but I'm not going to because I would go off on a tangent here and we'd be another really long video. So please go and reference the Archie Daniels Midland video and the, and to a lesser extent, the CVS Health video for more context on why this is really bad. Because again, I could spend 2 hours talking about just this one number. So I will save you from that boredom though. Interest coverage ratio, not great here. Anything above one shows that with the company's current earnings, it can cover the interest payments on its debt. So this is good in a sense, but typically you want this to be as high as possible. What this means is that GE at 1.8 rounded up is that they're barely able to cover their current interest or interest on their debt payments with earnings. Again, not great. Debt to equity also high, 2.4 rounded up. I look for anything at one or below typically for most investments. Assets, liabilities, sorry, my computer's slowed down again. Been running at snail speed all day. Oh, so that's a bit surprising. They have more cash than debt, which is a bit surprising. Actually, it's really surprising. I expected them to have a ton more debt than cash based on their profitability metrics, but I bet most of this cash is from raising debt, which I should look at in the balance sheet and also the cash flow statement if we need to. Okay, cash levels rising over the last couple quarters. That makes sense because of the coronavirus stuff, equipment, goodwill. Again, I'm not going to talk about this here. I talked about this in several videos, goodwill, how this is mostly useless. I talked about this in the CVS video and I think the Cody video and the ExxonMobil video. Go to that for a reference to why I think this number of goodwill is mostly useless. And I would write this off in a valuation kind of situation, which I'll talk about in a second. And so I know why their debt levels are relatively low compared to their cash, because it's from their GE Finance arena. So they're marked as different, possibly. We're going to have to go to the cash flow statement. I don't know. I know the GE Finance division has different accounting rules than the rest of GE because it's essentially a financial institution. So we'll have to go back and look at that. And again, I'm not going to talk about the equity value being almost negative or being almost zero after discounting the goodwill. Again, I talked about that in several other videos that I already mentioned. CVS, I think ExxonMobil, Cody, I think I talked about all that. So let's get to the cash flow statement. Day massive loss and I can't tell you what they have because they only have 2 years of data here. So I was going to tell you what they have over a long term, kind of an average, but I can't because it's not here. Okay, so impairments. I mentioned impairments earlier that their book value decline could be due to impairments. They had a huge loss in 2018 and they took $22 billion of impairments in 2018, which lowered the book value per share, which in turn also lowered the intrinsic value of the company. So this is one major reason why the value of the stock has continued to go down. Also because of the lower revenues and more profits, but those things caused the impairments. And then the impairments, along with the lower profits and revenues, caused the lower share price. This year, they've raised some cash due to gain on loss and disposals. Disposals of what? Sales of business. So they sold some assets. They sold $12 billion worth of assets this year to raise cash as well. So that's part of the reason why they have so much cash right now. Purchase of PP&E. So they purchase about, what is that, $6.5-7 billion a year in PP&E. And this year they're down to four, again, largely due to decreased investments due to the coronavirus, I would assume. This year, okay, so sales of businesses, purchase acquisition. Because say they sold another business, it looks like, or multiple businesses for $24 billion, again, to raise more cash. Okay, and they've issued a ton of debt this year as well, which again makes sense, or doesn't necessarily make sense, but that's what a lot of companies have done. And they've paid down actually a substantial amount of debt. They've paid down a substantial amount of debt over the long term. What is that, 150, 160 million in debt since 2015, which seems odd because of their complete lowering of their profits, cash flows, and revenues. That seems really weird. How are they paying off the debt? They're buying back shares. It's not share issuances. Doesn't look like it's with free cash flow, because that one, two, three, it's just been in the last 5 years, they've paid off about $150 billion in debt, and they've only earned over that time a net positive of like $4 billion in free cash flow. Even if you go to their operating profits, that's not even close. That's like $50, $60 billion. So how are they paying off the debt? And it's not even from the debt issuances either per year, because they're issuing $14 billion there while they repaid $47 billion in 2015. They issued $1.5 billion of debt in 2016, but they paid off almost $60 billion in debt. And that continues for the rest of the years. That doesn't make sense whatsoever. Probably sound confused, because I am. I don't know, frankly, how they're paying off this huge amount of debt. About, again, $150, $160 billion over the last 5 years. Actually, no, I was including this. So what is it about that? 47, 105, 130. Actually, you know, it's about $160, $170 billion still in the last 5 years. While they've only, so, super confusing. Makes no sense whatsoever. They've paid off in the last 5 years about $160, $170 billion in debt, based on the cash flow statement, while only issuing about 50, no, not even that, 14, 29, about $30 billion in debt, a little bit over that, while they've earned minimal cash flows in that time, while they've earned about $30, $40 billion in operating profits in that time. So I legitimately have no idea how they've been paying off the debt. Like even if you consider that they're paying off debt, lower rate debt, and with higher rate debt, the numbers just aren't even close to make up for that difference. And they've been buying back shares in this time too. So these financials literally make zero sense when it comes to the cash flow statement, which is why I love the cash flow statement, because it's harder to manipulate than the income statement. And again, legitimately, without going into their actual financial reports, their 10-Ks, stuff like that, I legitimately, based on these numbers, can't figure out logically how they're paying off this debt. About $160, $170 billion in the last 5 years, while they've earned not even close to that in operating profits and free cash flow. And they're buying back shares as well. It legitimately makes no sense. I can't think of a reason right now how this would be happening. I'm still trying to think. Does this mean there's necessarily a fraud happening? No. Financial engineering? Definitely. But honestly, I have no idea how, frankly, they're paying off the debt. I just don't understand it. And if I can't understand it based on their cash flow statements, after 14 years of experience evaluating thousands of companies, I can't think of a time where I've seen this big of a discrepancy in this kind of stuff ever in thousands of companies invested in all over the world. Again, I can't, with all that experience, I can't think of how they're doing this while still paying a dividend as well. I just don't. Again, I'm trying to scroll through here, trying to come up with an idea. And even so, their cash and cash equivalents at the beginning of the five-year period was $91 billion, and it's down to $27 billion in the trailing 12-month period. But even if you subtract, what is that, 60-ish billion dollars, there's still a huge gap of about 10, depending at the high end, $30 billion to $10 billion in difference. Again, I'm struggling to... explain what's happening here, because, and again, this is the exact, this is the exact process I use every time I look at an investment when I come across something that is either interesting in a good way or interesting in a bad way. This is interesting in a bad way. And according to the whistleblower who essentially let the world know about Bernie Madoff, He issued a full report in August of 2019 calling GE a bigger fraud than Enron. So, again, I'm not going to go that far because I'm not a forensic accountant. But to me, these numbers make zero sense. Just from a logic perspective, and I hope I've illustrated that well as I've tried to figure this out, but it just doesn't add up. Okay, well, I'm going to get off of that because, again, that's something else I could spend days on talking about. Plus, on top of that, they're overvalued here, and undervalued here. But having said that, I'm sure you can tell by now, there is zero chance I would invest in GE right now. I wouldn't buy it if I owned it. I wouldn't buy it brand new. And if I owned it, I would sell it because the numbers legitimately, I mean, they make no sense. Especially when you go to the cash flow statement, when you combine that with the revenue cratering, profits cratering, cash flows cratering, margins cratering over the last decade, combined with their share price cratering in the same time, this is not a stock I want to invest, be anywhere near investing. There's zero chance I would invest in this stock right now for all the reasons I outlined. But the biggest one, yeah, all the other stuff is bad, but the biggest one is that the numbers just don't make sense when you look at the cash flow statement, which again, I'm not saying they're a fraud, but apparently other people have, and the numbers don't make sense. So again, if I wouldn't own it in any capacity, I wouldn't buy it brand new either if I didn't own it. So I hope this helped. I hope this was entertaining. To me, it was entertaining. So I hope it was entertaining to you. If I missed something, if I didn't explain something well enough, let me know. Or if you want me to evaluate a stock like this for you, let me know in the comments below. If you're watching on YouTube, make sure to like, love, share, subscribe, comment, all that good stuff, and hit the notification bell so you're notified every time we release a new video, and release new videos all the time. If you're listening on the podcast, make sure to like, love, share, subscribe, all that good stuff, and really also appreciate a review, because the more reviews, views, and listens we get to our content, the more people we can help. If you're looking for free resources on how to become a better value investor faster and evaluate stocks faster, we have our free buy free gifts below, which you can get the full written down version of the preliminary analysis checklist that I just did on, or I did the visual part of this. You can get the full written copy of that plus four other gifts for free at the link below. You can also get our 7 tips guide to picking great stocks and 3 times you must sell, and a free copy, PDF copy of my book, How to Evaluate Us. You can get all those for free at the links below. And if you're looking to, or if you're trying to figure out how to find value and evaluate stocks faster, we also have information on our masterclass at the link below as well. But until next time, have a great day. Talk soon. Bye.